Hello and welcome to Giant Talk in the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles and this week it's all about the build-up to the America's Cup as we talk to the man behind Alinghi, Ernesto Bertarelli, the French multi-hull expert, Alain Gauthier. We also hear from the principal race officer, Harold Bennett, and we also get the views of Matt Sheehan. On top of all that, we have Bauer Becking as he puts pen to paper and his book on the last Volvo Ocean race is published. But first, as always, it's the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. The legal wrangling looks set to run all the way up to February the 8th when the 33rd America's Cup finally gets underway. Alinghi win the latest courtroom clash, the Battle of the Water Ballast. Frank Camas and the crew of Groupama 3 are on course to beat Orange 2's Jules Verne record as they pass the Canaries. Eight teams will compete in the Louis Vuitton Trophy in Auckland and Red Bull leads the Extreme 40s in Oman. Okay, now it's off to Valencia and after all the legal nonsense, some sailing. The man behind Alinghi, Ernesto Bertarelli, met Matt Sheehan amongst others and started by talking about the format of this deed of gift battle.
I think we could have agreed to different format, but I think now it's too late. I mean, we tried to sit down with them twice, and twice they served us papers while we were negotiating. Ultimately, the 3-7 format, given that the two boats and the two configurations are so different, I don't think that seven races will make a great deal of difference. I think with the deed of gift format, we'll find out who's got the fastest boat. I think, you know, remember, we're going to be sailing. The first race is 40 nautical miles. It's a lot of sailing, and the second one I think is 33 nautical miles. So it's a lot of sailing. It's a lot of, you know, miles to cover. So we'll find out who has the fastest boat. I don't think you need to drag it on. This is, in some way, it's almost better, you know, because the impact is stronger. It's February, you know, it's going to be hard to already get three good days of sailing in. No, I think it's fine like that. I mean, it's not going to be a short race. It's not going to be bing bing, you know. It's going to be probably longer than a race of the 32nd America's Cup, I think, because it was an hour and a half, and maybe you'd be hard pressed to finish in 2 hours, you know. That means that we will have to do in 2 hours means 20 knots VMG up and down.
Yeah. Is it right then that, as I understand it, you are going back to your roots then?
Yeah, that's why I started racing on multi-hulls. I barely did no racing in monohulls before I started racing seriously. Back in 95, I think. Yeah, 95. And this boat is basically the evolution of a boat that I built in 2000, which allowed me to win the Bol d'Or. Yeah, so I actually it's what I know a lot better. I mean, I'm a lot more useful to the team from a sailing and engineering standpoint with these boats, because a lot of things we've tried small scale. Now a lot of things change because of the speed and the size of the boat, but a lot of things are similar.
Then that brings up the idea that you can be, in some ways, be happy about the development.
Oh, I think everybody's happy about the development. I mean, I'm sure if the sailors, BMW Oracle, were honest and were not under any indication of a certain PR strategy, they would tell you that sailing these boats is fun.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, you take a kid out sailing, he wants to go fast. You know, he doesn't care if you're 1 or 2 degrees closer to the wind, or, you know, he just want to fly, you know, he just want to fast. I mean, speed is, come on, everybody wants to go fast. When you're on your dinghy with your daughter, what do you want to do, you know?
If there's survive.
Yeah. And we're doing some of that. And we're doing some of that. But, you know, as soon as there is a wave, you want to surf down that wave. Any boat wants to surf down the wave. Any boat wants to go fast. I mean, whoever tells you that, you know, speed is not important, it's just lying. I mean, it's just lying.
So, Ernesto, tell us the truth. If you win this cup, you think about multi-hull for the next one?
Well, I'm, you know, from clearly, I think these boats are a lot more fun. There's no question about it. But then on the other hand, my if my heart is with this boat, my brain tells me that we need to have a lot of teams. And when I look at the level of sophistication we got to, I'm not sure many teams can get to that level. So I think there's going to have to be some equation that allows for people to participate and yet have more fun than we had with the old V5. I mean, we have a couple of pieces of V5 left, one mast, in fact, down there. You look at it, I mean, you just say, you know, this is a, you know, it looks like a laser mast. You know, it's small, it's smaller than the bowsprit. So I think we should not be selfish also, but if it was only for us, for the team, if we were selfish, I mean, we would never want to change because it's so much fun. But I think there is a need for an equation. Also from a spectacle standpoint, I mean, that's going to be an experiment this time around. How are we going to get people to experience and share the experience of being on board? Is television really going to give us that, or what do we need? And I think it's nice to do something new also, you know?
How much of your time now do you dedicate to sailing in the America's Cup? I mean, I know now it's probably 100%, but in your sort of life generally?
Well, too much now. Too much now, but it's 100% now. Mm. But no, I still want to do things in my professional life, and I have a very active group looking at healthcare, and I love biotech, and it's part of me as much as multi-hull is part of me. I want to get back and do stuff in that sector.
Can you give us some idea of or any sort of indication of as to how much this campaign has cost compared to your previous America's Cup campaigns?
You know, the big difference is they're 2-1. We've had a lot of nonsense, like the legal costs we didn't have before. You know, that is something more. And the big difference is that it's been very difficult to finance the team because of the uncertainty. So yeah, it's really been, in that sense, Larry's strategy has been successful because he has more money than I have, or at least he seems to be prepared to spend more money than I do. Mm. And, you know, throwing more cost and making it more difficult to get revenues does make it more expensive, and does make it more difficult if you have less resources. You know, I have kids, I have a family, I'm 44, I have a life ahead, I want to make investment in healthcare. I have a lot of things I want to do with my life. You know, the America's Cup is important to me, it's very dear to me, but I don't think it should be a who's got more money game. You know, I think money is something you should use for better things than just buying yourself the cup and putting it in your yacht. That's why I was keen for this 33rd America's Cup to lower the cost. That was the whole concept: lower the cost. Turn around quickly, keep the sponsors, increase the revenue, lower the cost, make the team, you know, try to get as close as possible to break even. But if you have more resources than any other team and you want to win the cup at all, you know, whatever the means are, that's not the road you want to take. You know, I wanted to take the two-boat concept down to one boat, mm-hmm. basically reducing by almost half mm-hmm. the cost, okay? Now, one of these boats cost as much as two boats. So we'll say from a purely sailing engineering standpoint, the racing a boat like that is similar to a full-fledged two-boat campaign. Yeah. You know, now this campaign's got made it more expensive because we started with a monohull and then we changed to a multi-hull, mm-hmm. so we had that aspect of things, but this campaign has been very expensive, too expensive because of the situation. But, you know, putting together something like this is not very different. One of these is not very different than putting together two V5 boats.
And the time spent.
And the remember, the training on the V5, the hours spent to find that much difference. You know, the amount of sales that you got to do, the amount of sailors you got to have, the amount of support you need to have to go out with two boats is the same as to go out with one of these.
1988 was the last time we saw a Deed of Gift match, and it sparked off a massive revolution for the America's Cup. We had version 5 boats and the rest of it. Do you feel that we're on the verge of a massive revolution, whatever happens, whoever wins?
I think the revolution happened when the Cup arrived in Europe. And the result of the dog match is because of the revolution. I think the revolution was, we demonstrated that the Cup was a viable modern sport. You know, that there could be money raised, there could be live TV, there could be audiences around the world that had never watched sailing be captured by what was going on. And I think that attracted a tremendous amount of attention, a tremendous amount of ego, a tremendous amount of opinions, and didn't come together. We weren't able to, you know, follow through with it because people wanted to own part of it or be sure to be, you know, be winning. I think that's what happened. I think, you know, everything which I've heard being proposed by BMW Oracle is basically what we said in 2003 and thereafter. You know, we were criticized for the pre-regattas. What does the Louis Vuitton Pacific Series are? You know, we implemented an open Darcina, open base. We were the first one with an open base. Everybody does an open base. Everybody talks about the Darcina. And if you go to any, you know, people will continue to do that. Live television, you know, the question was there, are we going to have live television in sport? But, you know, the virtual spectator is important. I think we were not allowed to do it last time because of BMW Oracle. I think if we were to introduce audio so that we could hear what the tactician tells his helmsman, what the strategist talks, you know, be a completely different game. But that was something that we had planned for the 32nd. It was objected by BMW Oracle. So I think we laid out, the revolution was to lay out a script for success. And we had a success, and we could have made it even bigger. And unfortunately, it would have been more difficult for BMW Oracle to be in the match, because they would have had to raise Team New Zealand, which was formidable last time. They will have to race Prada, that beat them. They will have to race the Spanish team, which had a tremendous amount of support. And there were the English coming with a tremendous stack of young sailors. So it would have been very, very hard for them to make it through the final. And I don't think they wanted that.
Matt also got a chance to talk with one of the French multi-hull specialists helping Alinghi, Alain Gauthier, and he's expecting a close-run regatta.
Be a big surprise to see how close the boat could be, you know. It will depend about the wind condition, maybe, but with few range of wind we can have very too close boats, you know. It's difficult to know exactly their data because, you know, as me, and when you are following a boat with a chase boat, you have the speed, but you have not the wind speed at 60 meters. With the gradient, you have the wind speed at 3 meters. The angle of wind is not easy to have on the chase boat, and it's not easy to have exactly the data there. We know that we are close. I think we were in advance before they got the wind, but now with the wind, I think they are really, really close to us.
Right.
Will depend about the wind condition, I think, and the wind sea, maybe.
What's your biggest concern about the wing? Is it that they're going to be able to point higher, or is it that they might be able to sail faster, or are they more manoeuvrable?
I think the wing is a real nice thing, you know. It's a real interesting. But you have some advantage, you have some disadvantage. Their platform are not the same as ours, you know, the Trimaran is heavier and wider, and I think they need more power. And the wind gives there some power they need. And I don't know exactly, but I think if you have some swell, I'm not sure the wings will be so efficient. You have few, you know, few things like that, and the balance we don't know exactly. But I'm sure they take a step more with the wings. Actually.
And as far as the racing itself is concerned, multi-hulls are notoriously slow to tack compared to a monohull, and it's a big course. The penalty for tacking in terms of time could be quite big. Does that then mean, are we going to see boats split off and go their separate ways? Is there more of a temptation to do that?
You know,
tacking to cover seems
tacking,
quite risky.
You know, when you want to have a good tack on a boat, you can have it, you know.
Yeah.
We did it with the 60 Zorma. At the start of the 60 Zorma, the boat was designed for offshore racing. We have short rudder, we have short dagger boat, and the Grand Prix is more important part, and we have deeper board, deeper rudders, and at the end we tack so nicely, you know, and that's the same for this kind of boat. The tacks are maybe better as you can imagine, and after that you with a 20 miles long length for the first race. Yeah. I cannot imagine the guys let the other guy.
Really? Yeah. It's too dangerous. Too risky.
It's too dangerous. You have your forecast. Maybe you want the right. Maybe you want the left. But if you want the right and the other guys go to the left, I'm not sure you can let it go. Mm. Maybe you have to come back and to be at the right of this boat if you want the right, but it's too dangerous to I think, but I'm not a tactician, but I think we can have some tacks because it will be dangerous to let the boat in 20 miles. It's a huge
So you're one of the few people who've actually raced powerful multi-hulls against each other in a fleet situation. And one of the things that's been a big concern for this match is the idea of two boats coming head-to-head in the pre-start. Are you worried about that? Is that a major concern, or are we all getting too worried about it?
Yeah, we are worried, and we are looking, and I was a few days ago with Ed Bird on the chase boat to watch the Extreme Current, Extreme 40 of regular training for the start, and we know that it will be important because not really to have the best start, but for me the important thing is don't have penalty, because on multi-hull a penalty is really a lot of money, you know, because when you do your penalty, the guy is at 20 knots, and during 1 minute, or I don't know how many time you take for the penalty,
yeah.
1 minute you... And in my view, try to don't have the penalty at the start. And that's why it could be interesting to see some nice view. But not really to have the best start, because on a 20 miles, you have time to...
Right.
You know, not to start exactly at the second, but start clearly without penalty and do your race.
Okay, next we hear from the New Zealander Harold Bennett, the principal race officer for AC33, with the daunting job of trying to lead and organise a team to run all the races. And big is everything about this competition, the area they need to race, the size of the boats. And the man putting the questions to Harold is someone who you could rightfully describe as the voice of the America's Cup. From New Zealand, PJ Montgomery.
Harold Bennett, how on earth do you set a course 25 miles offshore and 300 metres of water for these huge beasts?
Well, I've got to correct you on the metres of water. It's near 1,000. But in simple terms, no, you can't anchor out there. The boys that we've got driving our boats have been doing a lot of practice at holding station for doing this sort of thing, and we've found it to be that we can probably hold station closer than what our boats were staying on anchor in the last event that we held here. So we're pretty confident that in the deep water we can set a good line and put good marks down by way of holding position. So with the marks, incidentally, we're using the 8.5 meter ribs that with a buoy on the top of them, and we have one guy driving the rib to keep it on station. So the marks are ribs, and we have a big committee boat, a power cat, a 45-foot power cat, and so we've done quite a bit of practice at working like that, and so to that end, we're quite comfortable with achieving it.
Let's talk about the scale of what you're dealing with. Rewind to America's Cup 2000. How long was each windward leg? Then fast forward to February 2010, and how long is the leg there?
Well, obviously, in the 32nd America's Cup, the legs there were three miles long, or 3.25 miles for the first one. And because here in the windward leeward race we do for the 33rd America's Cup, we got a windward leg of 20 miles. And the challenges we have with that are quite huge, because over 20 miles, getting the wind all in the same direction is not easy. And certainly the sea state changes quite a bit between, say, the outer end of a course and the inner end of the course. So there's some real challenges with that sort of thing here. And to complicate matters, these boats sailed big, wide angles, and much wider angles than what the Version 5 boats do. And so from that point of view, our diamond, if you like to put it that way, is quite big. And once we get closer to the shore with these massive ley lines, we've got to be careful we don't block off the port area and of either Saguntay or Valencia, and we keep clear of the maritime mooring areas, which are there for holding the marine traffic.
When you talk about the diamond area, how much water space do you need to work with this one? Are we talking several hundred square miles, in contrast to how much water space did you have to work with in 2007?
Yeah, well, you do. This time we've got when we set a course down for the windward leeward, we're dealing with an area of 400 square miles. And we don't have a lot of boats to protect that, but we do have Guardia Civil who are going to do a bit of protection of that. So it's a huge area, there's no doubt about that. And when you go out there, and we've got a westerly breeze and we're offshore by 22, 23 or 24 miles, something like that, the vision of the land has disappeared. You can't see the city, and you see the mountains in the background, and very faintly. But you lose all your vision of landmarks and things like that to deal with. So you're really in the open ocean when you're starting it. So it's quite a big difference to, you know, in running this event compared to other events on courses which are like 3 miles long. It's much more difficult.
Well, we've got a double hit of PJ this week as he also looks ahead to the cup with Matt Sheehan.
Matt Sheehan, what is your expectation on the eve of this incredible matchup?
Well, it's going to be pretty special, that's for sure. And it's of course the big dilemma that everybody's been discussing for weeks and weeks, if not months. But we've got a cat and a try going head to head. And what do I think personally between the two? Well, I think that Oracle's got the edge. I'm very impressed with what I've seen. I've watched both boats sail on the water in similar conditions. Oracle's got the wing, and it's the wing that really impresses me. It's a very versatile piece of kit. It's pretty impressive for a start. Anything 68 metres tall, that's pretty impressive. But it's very versatile. It seems to be able to or the crew seem to be able to switch it on and off at will, the power. The boat seems incredibly nimble. And from the people I've spoken to who've sailed with solid wings, and there aren't that many in the world who have, but those that have seem to all say that wings tend to sail higher than conventional soft sails. Now, to my thinking, if you've got a boat that sails higher than your opponent and it's more nimble and more manoeuvrable, and we're talking about a match race, I think you've got quite an advantage.
That is the key issue about this whole cup, because the mystery is coming back to the cup, as in both players have never danced with each other. Rather than previous America's Cups where the VMG, we know how the boats can point to the top mark, how close they can get. But in this, we just don't know. And therefore, the mystery returns. But your hunch is that the VMG, or velocity, the closer to the mark that they're going, no matter if it is 20 nautical miles away, you think BMW Oracle may have it with this incredible, incredible wing sail.
Yes, I do. And funny enough, I've just been out actually watching them today on the water. And I say I think they can sail closer to the breeze. Do you know, the weird thing about watching this boat is that with that solid wing, compared to looking at a conventional sail, you've got no idea where the wind is coming from. I'm not saying the crew, but if you're watching the boat from off the boat, you've got no idea where the wind is coming from. And you're travelling at three, sometimes even four times the wind speed. If you're just trying to follow them, you just can't figure out in the light conditions where the wind's coming from. So you've got no idea how high they're sailing, or whether they're sailing low, or whether they're pinching. If they've got a soft sail up, it's a lot easier to figure that out, because if they've cracked off a little bit, then you can see that the leech is open and the sail's got a different shape. If they're pinching a bit and sailing up into the breeze a bit more, then the luff is blowing back. You can see that on a soft sail. But if they're just sailing with that solid wing, it's very, very difficult to figure it out. So what we don't know is, we just don't know what kind of angles they really can sail. But the historical evidence suggests that a wing sail should be able to sail a lot closer to the breeze. But there's one other caveat, of course. It's all very well to look at the differences between a soft sail and a wing sail and then make up one's mind that a wing sail is better. But, of course, it is a step into the unknown. And it's a very, very complex piece of kit. There are lots of controls, there are lots of little fiddly bits all over the wing, whereas a soft sail, it's basically just scaling something up. It's conventional, relatively conventional technology. So I think the risk will be, although the BMW Oracle may well have a big technical advantage, the risk is, will that technology hang together on the day? And as we both know, in 2003 in Auckland, when the Kiwis went out with their boat with the Hula and a whole load of innovative ideas, and within 15 minutes we'd seen a spectacular breakdown of the technology that was supposed to win the cup. And who knows, maybe that could be the case this time too.
Well, we're joined this week by one person we know very well on the Volvo Sailing Podcast, Bauer Becking. Of course, a man who has been through many of the Whitbread and Volvo campaigns, but after the last one decided to write a book, Never Give Up. Bauer, why this race? What was it that made you decide that this was the time to write the book?
Well, I think I've been gone for so many races and I've gone for all the procedures. And one of the things I did in the last race, maybe a lot of listeners know, I started my own website. And there was such a big enthusiasm over it. Actually, there was questions and responses. Why don't you write a book? And that's how it came up. So halfway through the race, we basically started working on it. And we've got the result now. So that's something really exciting for myself.
How difficult was it to go through all the things that happened on the last race and put them down on paper, if you like?
Well, I think the advantage was that I did daily updates on my website, so there was like a playbook more or less ready. And then I've been really fortunate to find a co-author, as maybe the readers know, Riyad Al-Samarai, who was working for Volvo. And I like his style of writing as well. So together we went through the whole race and put the book together. And I think the result is fantastic.
It was a good story, I have to say, your story of the last race. But not always happy. How difficult was it to write about the difficult parts of the last race, Bauer? The problems you had with the boat and things like that?
Well, that was just one of the things, and like just to show the people that, and especially like I think in the economical climate where we are right now, like there's a lot of people who just let their shoulders hang, and I think we showed it in the last campaign that never giving up is just the motto through a campaign, and then you can still achieve really good results and satisfactory results. So I've been approaching it like always on the positive side. We will see that the book is, of course, we're speaking about things what shouldn't have happened, but it's always like on a positive note, and that's how we came on the title as well.
Now, it's an interesting one, Bauer. When I talk to you guys when you're doing the Volvo race, doing other big campaigns, it's almost as if it's another day at the office. How was it to approach telling your story to people who perhaps didn't know how to sail around the world? Was that at all difficult?
Well, I think just in general, my style, also on my website, has been always like trying to write for the big public and not just for the sailors, because they know anyway what's going on. So I think we've got a real nice way of just expressing ourselves, like what is the way how I actually was living the race, and as well telling some things what happened on the beforehand, and then of course during the race. And as well, like going as a theme for the book, as well as just how important families are, just in general. Like my wife and my daughter have been extremely supportive, and that just goes for the book as well. So there's always a lot of things, but I think what is interesting for the bigger, broad public than just for the sailors.
Now, the new book Never Give Up is available online. You can get that via www.bauerbecking.com, and we'll make sure we repeat that later on. But Bauer, what have you been doing since the race, and what are your projects for 2010?
2010 looks like to become a really exciting year, because I'm back in the Far 40s with Nanoq from the Danish Crown Prince. And then there's going to be a new 80-footer getting launched in Sydney, and we're going there in the beginning of March to do sea trialing for a month. And then we're going to do several regattas for that boat. Then I'm going to sail a little bit on other 540s and big mega yachts. So the year is looking, in that sense, really good for me.
I have to ask then, perhaps with 2011 looming, might we see you back for another campaign and for another book?
Well, who knows? Of course, I'm looking into it, and I really hope it is all coming together. But right now there is nothing to report yet, but I hope in the near future there's coming an announcement that I will be in the next race. I'm really working hard on that part anyway, because the race is just fantastic.
You can order Never Give Up by Bauer Becking and Riethal Samurai from www.bauerbecking.com. And remember, if you haven't read Mark Chisnell's account of the last Volvo, Spanish Castle to White Knight, why not? Buy it now! Okay, that's it for this week. Should the America's Cup be done and dusted by Friday next week, we'll have a special update. Failing that, we'll be back as usual in a fortnight's time. And remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.org.